Today is August 3rd, 2007. We are at the Atlantic Coast Bank, 8th and Center Streets in Fernandina Beach, Florida. The following interview is being conducted as part of the Amelia Island Museum of History's Veterans History Project in partnership with the Library of Congress. Today we are interviewing Commander Darrell R. Powell, United States Navy, retired. Commander Powell was born on the 22nd of May, 1946, in Erie, Pennsylvania. My name is Don Hill, and I will interview the subject on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History. Assisting me today is Gerhard Tam, who will operate the recording equipment. I will now begin the interview. Darrell, from your bio sheet, it looks like you enlisted in 1963, within days of your 17th birthday. Perhaps you could tell us where you were, what you were doing during those glorious years, and take us on a journey through your 30-year Navy career, if you would please, sir.
I'll try to do that. Actually, it starts quite a few years before that. When I was 12 years old, I was fortunate enough to know what I wanted to do. I got heard the Marine Corps hymn, and I decided I wanted to be in the Navy, and I wanted to go to the Naval Academy at 12 years old. And I was in the 7th grade, and my 7th grade teacher said, well, you seem to have a good background for it, and she encouraged me to go to a private school where I could prepare for it. And my mother told me at that time, she just finished putting my brother through college. He was 10 years older than I was, and she said, I know I can afford to send you to private school now, but maybe not college when your time is to go to college. So we looked around and in all the catalogs, and we decided on I'd go to Bowles. So I went to We lived in Miami at the time, and I went to Bowles for a year. And at the end of the year, I noted that they sent two boys to a service academy. And it was at that time it was a co-ed, and you still wore uniforms and all. And I said, I didn't like those odds, so we went back in the book. So I ended up going up to Bowles Preparatory School up in Silver Spring, Maryland. And I spent 4 years there, and that was really, really good. And I, in 63, the year before I was going to graduate from high school, joined the Naval Reserve. And that's when I, because I didn't know any congressmen, and I didn't know the president, and I didn't really understand all the process. But I knew that if I joined the Reserve, I had a pretty good chance of being accepted to the Naval Academy with my background. And so I did, and was at White Oak, Maryland. We'd go do our time there, and I went to boot camp, and then a year later I was accepted to the Naval Academy, and I went into the fleet class in class 1968. And I still remember that July day when it was really hot, and we're all 1,200 of us were standing there and being sworn in, and just decided at that time I really should have brought my golf clubs with me. That wasn't going to be realized. And
that you should not have taken them along?
Yeah. About halfway through team summer, I realized, that really was a mistake. But it was a very interesting time, a busy time, and fortunately, I graduated in 1968 from the Naval Academy. While I was there, I did 1 year of rowing crew. I was a coxswain, and I decided I didn't like to do that in February the next year when snow was coming down my megaphone. So I decided not to do that anymore, and so I came back home for spring break, and that's where I met my future bride. And we got married.
When you say come back home, Darrell, you meant back to Southern Florida? Is that where you...
Yeah,
you took spring break and you came back...
Oh, I came back home to Southern Florida, Miami.
Okay.
I still live down there, and that's where I met. My wife was Fort Lauderdale, where the boys are, spring break time, and I knew her about 3 hours that night, and invited her to June Week And I knew her about 5 days in. Went on a summer cruise, came back in August from summer cruise, and asked her to marry me. And then 2 years later, we got married. So I was a bachelor for about 3 days after I graduated from the Naval Academy. We got married in the chapel. And next June, we'll celebrate our 40th wedding anniversary. So from the Naval Academy, after graduation, I went to a nuclear power school in Bainbridge, Maryland, for 6 months of intensive study there, and then went to Windsor Locks up in Connecticut to the prototype.
Did you get interviewed by Admiral Rickover?
Oh, yes. A very memorable experience. I did get interviewed by Admiral Rickover, and he asked me what I was going to do. He asked me if there was anybody significant in my life, and I told him there was. My was engaged to Virginia, and he said, well, what does she do? And I said, well, she's a secretary. And I said, she's a receptionist. He said, well, what the hell is she? And I said, well, she's a secretary receptionist. And he asked me some technical, he said you had some problems with some technical questions, and he said, I guess it's a pretty good thing you have to take a comprehensive exam to graduate from the Naval Academy. And I noted that that was probably right. But he did kick me out of his office, and I had to go sit in a room by myself for a couple hours. But all in all, it was just a very interesting, he was a very interesting individual, and he did accept me into the program. So, after the prototype, which was basically a submarine hull with all the equipment in it, and you did shift work, and you went and learned systems and traced out systems and put the theoretical knowledge that you had learned at nuclear power school at the prototype into practical. When you graduate, and at the end, and the reason Rickover was very keen, you did have comprehensive exams. I mean, throughout the nuclear power program, you had 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hour comprehensive examinations. So, both oral and written. And so at the end of that...
How long was that process?
The whole process took a year. It was 6 months at the nuclear power school and 6 months of prototype. And after prototype, which was now 69, it was February 69, so in fact, I'd been at the prototype for about 4 months, and my roommate from the Naval Academy, who was an aviator, had a fatal air accident. And as just to give you an example of that program, I wasn't able to go to the funeral because of where I was in my study. And you start to still feel a little useless because you've got classmates in Vietnam, and you're sitting behind still doing schoolwork. So, but I did get to my first submarine, which was the Theodore Roosevelt, Gold Crew, and went on patrols out of Holy Loch, Scotland. Qualified submarines there, and very fortunate enough to have my XO was Jack Darby, who was a star in the submarines, and started. Submarines was a small community to begin with, so you kept seeing, depending on which coast you were on, you kept seeing the same people usually, and you formed friendships that lasted for a while. After I went to, after being on the Theodore Roosevelt, I went to a submarine school and took the submarine officer advanced course, which is basically just trying to give you better tactical awareness and some advanced theories of that.
How long was the tour on the Theodore Roosevelt, and was it more like an apprenticeship? Or did you have a specific assigned billet?
No, I was a division officer. I had IC, Interior Communications, and Electrical Division. And let's see, 69. I was there about 2.5 years.
So you made JG, maybe almost lieutenant.
I was JG on board there.
Okay.
And then went to nuclear power school. I had about 6 months on TRAPANG, which was an approach shakedown availability at Groton, Connecticut, which was an SSN, just waiting for my place to open up at the summer high school, because Roosevelt was getting ready to go into overhaul, and I wasn't going to go with that crew, so they found a place for me 6 months, which was really good because I got a lot more. I qualified as officer deck there again, and got some more sea time. But also got some more shipyard time, and which, as you'll see as we go through my career, is marked quite a bit. After summoning officer advanced course in Groton, I went to the Narwhal, which was 671, which was I won't say experimental, but it was the precursor, if you will. They put the natural circulation plant on the Narwhal, which was to reduce noise, flow noise, and propulsion plant noises. And it was really the precursor to the Triton submarine, if you will. And when I reported aboard, Nick Kellogg, my CEO, asked me what background was, and he was aghast that I had not gone to the S5G prototype in Idaho. And he called up the Bureau and he says, "Darrell's never been to S5G, you know." And they said, "Well, he's the first of many that you're going to see." I think the hardest thing I had to do was qualify engineering officer of the watch on there, because it was so different from the prototype that I went to. And but a lot of good, probably the closest, one of the closest wardrooms. We made a lot of special operations, and that certainly does bring the wardroom together quite a bit. And, friendships to this day. We was on Narwhal for 3 years. I was damage control assistant during that time, and did some radio work also. Virginia and I, during that time, she was able to come over to England, and when we came off of operation, and spent about 10 days over there. And my brother was over at Portsmouth at that time. He was lieutenant commander, and so we visited him.
The Royal Navy station at Portsmouth, England.
Yes, he was an exchange officer. He had some time in Vietnam as Oko Pacetti, and previously as an advisor. And he was up for commander, and unfortunately passed away 2 weeks later. So.
Ooh.
Pretty emotional time still for me,
of course.
So after the Narwhal, I was up for transfer. I qualified engineer on the Narwhal, and I told Virginia, I said, "Well, this was in 75. Virginia was about 5 months pregnant, and I said, "Look, if I pass the engineer's exam, we'll probably stay here in New London, and I'll go to sub school and teach for a couple of years because I was due for surgery. And if I don't, we'll probably stay here, and I'll probably go engineering duty officer. So either way, because we just bought another house, and we still have our roots were getting pretty deep in Connecticut, because she was born in Norwich. I took the engineer's exam, passed, and I went over to the Bureau right after that, and they said, "Well, we want to send you to La Madalena, Spain, to be the radcon officer on the tender there." I said, "Gee, my wife's 5 months pregnant. I don't think that's going to fly too well." "Okay. Well, then we'd like to send you to the tender in Holy Loch, Scotland, as radcon officer."
Could you expand on what that acronym means,
please? Oh, I'm sorry. Radiological controls.
Radiological control.
Right, okay. Radcon. And that's basically you were in charge of the division that did radiological control work on the submarines. And at that time, we were going through radiological control officers quite a bit, and we were sort of eating our young, if you would. And then the last one that they offered me was radiological controls officer in the tender in San Diego. And I said, "You know, I didn't do real well at RADCON at my engineer's exam." They said, "You did fine." And so I ended up going to San Diego because I knew it'd be better. And I remember driving into San Diego a month later. After telling my bride we would not be moving, and we sold our house and So we're driving into San Diego, and I look over at her. It's raining, and she sees all these houses on steep hills, and the tears are just coming down her. But we had a good time in San Diego. That was good. Good time.
Excuse me. Sort of.
Yep. So Virginia wasn't, when I looked over, she was crying, but San Diego was a good tour for us. Two of our sons were born there, and we met some wonderful people there, and after being on the Sperry, I guess I should say that when I was on the Sperry, which was my shore duty, which my wife certainly didn't understand being on a ship for shore duty, we deployed to Pearl Harbor for 3 months. She also didn't understand how I could go away for 3 months being on shore duty. And to complicate matters, my former engineer from the Narwhal came, and he was a squadron engineer on the staff at Squadron 3 where I was, and he didn't have to deploy. The squadron got off as we went away, and she says, "How can Bob stay behind and you go to Hawaii?" But we got Hawaii out of our system. She came over for one of our wedding anniversaries. And so that worked out pretty well. And after 2 years on the Sperry, I went to the permit as the navigator. And made lieutenant commander. And I spent 3 years on the permit out of San Diego making deployments.
Could you tell us what kind of vessel a permit was?
I'm sorry, permit was a fast attack.
Fast attack.
SSN 594. It was part of the Thresher class until that tragedy, and then it became the permit class. I took a permit through overhaul up at Mare Island, California. So that was another one of our moves. And we were up there in overhaul for 2 years. And you can see the overhaul keeps coming up here. After a permit, I was up for XO, and we had just moved back to San Diego. We'd been only there about 8 months, and it was time to move, and we went back to the East Coast, to the Simon Bolivar, where I became XO, and Simon Bolivar was just coming out of overhaul, so I had to spend probably about 4 months up in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, how you want to call it, and at the naval shipyard there, as she came out of overhaul.
And what kind of vessel was assigned to
her? She was one of the 41 for Freedom, SSBN.
SSBN.
Yeah.
Would that be a Polaris?
But she had been reconfigured. She was shooting Poseidons.
Poseidon.
Which was the precursor to the Trident.
Right.
The D4. Bigger missile, longer range. My CO in that ship was Jasper Johnston, and just a super guy, and learned a lot from him on how to conduct business, and we got along really well. Jasper knew what he wanted to get done, and I knew how to get it done. We had a fantastic wardroom, and we had a very good tour of duty together, very successful. Coming out of our overhaul, we went down and did our demonstration of shakedown operations out of Cape Canaveral, which is where you go down and prove the missile system. And we got to launch a missile. We went on our first patrol, and they brought us back early to do what's called an OT, which is an operational test. They bring you in, they remove, they select missiles at random, they remove the warheads, they put on telemetry, just like a warhead, and then you go down to the Cape and you launch missiles, and that's part of their continuing proofing of the system. We got to do a 4-missile ripple launch. We shot one-fourth of our missiles. Quite an experience. It was very nice. So I had a very good 3-year tour on the Simon Bolivar, and then in 88 it was time to... While I was on Simon Bolivar, I was selected for command, and I then went to in the fall of '87. I went to nuclear power. Went to naval reactors up in Washington D.C. for the prospective officers course, prospective commanding officers course. And that was a trial, and I was really tested hard there, and I made it through.
And that was the intent of that course.
Yeah, that's the intent. They want to make
in
sure
all facets.
In all facets of the nuclear engineering part. Rickover was no longer there, but it was still the same standards, the same high standards, the same protocols. Everything's the same. And when you left there, they were confident that you were going to be technically sound and able to do your job and do the right thing, do the conservative thing. So I reported. Then went to Comsub Land in Norfolk, Virginia for my completing the PCO course, which is basically embarking on different submarines and doing tactical type things and getting the submarine side of it, the non-engineering side. After that, I reported to the Daniel Boone, and I went to the Daniel Boone, and it was going to go into overhaul. As you can see, I have a sort of black X by my name, I guess. Daryl's going to go to overhaul a lot. but before that, before overhaul started, I was I was one of the first submarines that was low on fuel. Didn't really have the fuel that we needed to make strategic patrols. Mm-hmm. So we were tied up alongside the pier, maintaining readiness, which is, as you can imagine, quite difficult to do. It's one thing when you're out there training at sea, but when you're tied up to a pier, trying to simulate being underway and trying to maintain your crew and tell them, yeah, we've got to be ready, and they said, hey, we've got no fuel. Well, 2 months before we were going into overhaul, naval reactors sharpened their pencils and they said, we've got enough fuel for you to make a 2-week patrol, which was really good. So we got underway. We did do a strategic patrol for 2 weeks, had a major casualty. Electrical casualty, and we handled it well. So it was just very, it was edifying that whole period was just very enlightening.
And you were the commanding officer during that?
During that,
that period.
Yeah. Then we went to overhaul at Newport News, Virginia for 2 years. And that was okay. I mean, it's, overhaul is overhaul. At the completion of that, I've been in command now for about 3 years. And after overhaul, I started strategic patrols. And I was on board the Daniel Boone for probably 4 years. And during that time, we combined crews. So there was a time when I had about 300 guys under me. And then when we split, of course, it went back down. But saw a lot of different people, a lot of different things going on. After I left the Daniel Boone in 88, I went to Kings Bay. I was the first officer at Kings Bay at Submarine Squadron 20. And I was there a year assembling the staff and writing regulations and policies before the squadron commander showed up. Very enjoyable time. Went out to Bangor, Washington, out to observe Squadron 17, how they did business. One of the things I was charged with is to formulate a policy, basically the patrol cycle policy for the East Coast, since we are different from the West Coast and how we do business. So I did that, and my suggestions were enacted, so that was very gratifying to me. I can remember the admiral from at the time. The group commander was not in Kings Bay as it is now. It was Group 6 out of Charleston, and the group commander came down, and we were looking out from the operations out at the wharf, and he says, well, "We're not ready for the Tennessee to get in here." And I said, "Yes, sir, I understand that." He said, you know, the dredging is one of the stumbling blocks here, that we need to get the Corps of Engineers to get the channel dredged. And well, he said, we're just have to, you know, get those missiles down. Because the missiles, the D-4 missiles, huge missiles, were being made at Kings Bay. And what I informed the admiral, which he didn't really realize at the time, was that the only way to get those missiles from Kings Bay to the Cape, where the production testing was done, was with the submarine. He was used to being able to move missiles like the Polaris and the Poseidon on rail cars, and D-4 was just too big. And so I said, well, I said, you better figure out then how they're going to get the missiles made down the Cape if you can't get them down here, because your submarine is your only method of transportation. And that was a real eye-opener, I think. And needless to say, the Corps of Engineers got on board very quickly and got the channel dredged, and things went on time, and production schedule went, and the testing went as scheduled. So, squadron commander, Bob LeBrec, came about a couple weeks before the Tennessee arrived, and we had a glorious arrival for the Tennessee, which really started the operations for submarine squadron 20 and the Trident submarines in Kings Bay. After my time at Kings Bay, I went down to Squadron 20. I was there about 4 years. I knew it was time to move on, because I started redoing things that you'd done earlier. You know, when you start repeating SIP, it's time to move on. That was one of the beauties of being in the military. You frequent change of jobs. You never got bored. And I went down to Squadron 16 for a year as Chief Staff Officer, and then retired in 93 from submarines after 25 years.
Wow.
So the Navy was very good to me. Very good to me.
May I ask a couple of questions, please?
Yeah.
Just could you take us through, you don't need to go through the entire thing, but how does one, you know, you talked about being tied up at the pier and how to keep morale up and everything. How about the overhaul process and keeping the troops, you know, interested, yeah, excited, motivated? That has to be a leadership challenge of great significance, I would think.
Yes, it is, and it really does start at the top, and you have to have the right officers and chiefs, because it all just got to tie together, because we very easily can go south on you very quickly. And it's just a matter of continually providing challenges, making them sure they understand just how important it is that, you know, how you go to war is how you train. Yeah. And if you're going to be the best at your trade, then you need to train that way. And I was fortunate to be throughout my career with superior people that were able to carry out, either direct me on what I needed to do or carry out those things that I felt needed to be done when my time came to leave. And with little direction, I had superior people working for me. And the key was, if you didn't have those people that you needed to document and have them move on and move out, get somebody in that could do the job. So, but yes, the personnel, keeping the people motivated. And, that was just
speaking of, but having the right people, could you share with us maybe two or three mentors or significant people who had an impact on your career? You talked about, a Commander Darby maybe, and a Jasper Johnson and Bob LeBrec.
Yeah.
Were there?
I think Jack Darby, I was just a young kid, and he was he was one of the stars in the submarines, and he basically took me under his wing. I bunked with him. At that time, the XO didn't have a separate stateroom, and I bunked in the lower bunk. And but that's a time when, as a JO, you're getting your feet on the ground, you're learning how to do business, how to be a leader, how to qualify. And he basically showed me those things that I should do and I shouldn't do by example, and encouraged me, and just but was also a friend. And so that was very good. When I went to command, when I went to XO, Jack Johnston was a, we were both short of stature. But we played off each other very well. As I said, he knew what he wanted done, and I was able to get it accomplished. Jack had a couple things that he would say. He'd say, first of all, if you can't be on time, be early. And I really took that to heart. And we made our people understand that. You know, we didn't have a meeting just to have a meeting. We had a meeting and its substance, and we got it over with, and we went to work. Coming out of overhaul, you go through a series of tests. You go through start out with a tech assist, which is for nuclear weapons. You learn how to, you're showing Sinclair Fleet. They come aboard, and they're looking to see how proficient you are doing operations, looking at your personnel reliability program, looking at all your records, seeing where you're weak so that they can point those out to you so you can get ready when they come back to do the nuclear weapons acceptance inspection a month or two later. And you also have an operational reactor safeguards exam. Well, Jack said, got the weapons officer, and we had a super weapons officer, Dana Hazer, and he said, guys, he said, my goal is to have the tech assist count the nuclear weapons acceptance inspection. He said, wouldn't it be great if when we're supposed to be doing the tech assist, we're actually in Fort Lauderdale on Liberty. So that's what we pushed to the crew. We worked on that goal. Tech assist team came aboard as we got out of the hall shortly after getting underway. And lo and behold, it did count as the NWAI. So we did, in fact, we were on Liberty in Fort Lauderdale.
Well done.
So, and that went so far to with the crew because, you know, we weren't blowing smoke. We actually did what we set out to do. The ORS, Operational Reactor Safeguards Exam, came along, and we got an excellent on that, which is really, really hard to do, and really hard to do coming out of overhaul. But we did, and just once again to Jack's leadership and our ability to execute what he wanted done. But so I learned from him how to do things properly as far as preparation and those types of things. I remember one of the, usually you have at the squadron a post command captain that rides you and when you're going on sea trials. And he came out for refresher training. He was very concerned that, because Jack and I had a good time together. I mean, we just really interacted well. And the captain was concerned that we were having too good a time at the expense maybe of our junior officers and the crew. After he had ridden us for a few days, he realized that wasn't the case. That, in fact, we just got along really well. We knew what each of our roles were, and we had a good wardroom. The wardroom was not, they enjoyed what they were doing, which wasn't always the case in a lot of Southern wardrooms. And so it was very positive.
So you were then at Kings Bay for a fair amount of time during its growing process. Is it fair to assume, and maybe you can elaborate on this a little bit, that that's how you wound up in Nassau County and in Fernandina Beach?
Oh, definitely. When I got out of the Navy, we were here for five years. We looked up in St. Mary's, and my oldest son, who I moved in his senior year of high school, comes to the car and says, I've never been in a convenience store that sells truck parts. And so, anyway, we came over to Fernandina, and he found a house on the ocean, and he was into surfing, and so he said, I'll live in the closet. He didn't care. So that worked out well. But 5 years after, we've been here 5 years, I retired and looked around for different places for jobs, and nobody had any Southerns they wanted me to drive. Nobody was beating down my door to go to North Carolina or to California or anything like that. I did look out in Washington State at some nuclear waste jobs, but that really didn't tickle our fancy that much. So stayed here in Nassau, kicked around for about a year, and then got a job with the Duval County Public Health as facilities manager, which was really good because that prepared, that took all my rough edges off in the military, dealing with doctors and nurses. realizing their priorities were a little different than mine. Realizing that the hospitals didn't get underway. It wasn't a national emergency. But so when that position came over with the Nassau County School Board as maintenance manager, I had the facilities background as well as the people background, and I was about one of about 70 candidates and was selected for that. And really, my ability to, a lot of what you're testing in nuclear power was oral, but also essay-type questions. And part of this hiring process with Nassau County was essay questions. And so I was able to, even if I didn't know what I was talking about, I was able to write quite a
good story.
So, it was good because the guy that hired me, Chris McConnell, he and I have worked together now for 11 years, and we get along very well. We look at everything from completely different sides, and we're completely different, and but that works to our advantage. So, I guess I've been fortunate to have two careers that I really like. Couldn't have written a better job description for myself when I was in the Navy of getting out than I have here at the Nassau County School Board. So
that's great. Any questions, Gerhard? Any other last thoughts, Daryl? We appreciate very much you.
No, I feel fortunate that I've had the careers that I've had, and I was able to do things that many people haven't been able to do in my 25 years in the Navy. And that when I got out, I didn't feel I had to make a mark. I already made my mark, and now it's time to give back. Mm-hmm. And that's what I try to do through the school.
Well done, sir. Thank you for sharing your recollections with Daryl for the benefit of our nation. This concludes the interview with Daryl R. Powell.